The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian sitting areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when their travels bring them to Washington. For more information, visit www.tabardinn.com.
Hey, and welcome to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. So we have had photographers on in the past. I myself am a photographer. We've had photo editors. We've had an array of people that contribute to the finished product of a cookbook. And a lot of people know the chefs. A lot of people know the writers, even though they're ghostwriters sometimes. A lot of people know the photographers, or at least I hope they do. But a lot of people don't know who the designers are. So I'm lucky enough to have two very talented ladies on today, Laura Polisi and Amy Sly. Amy, you with us?
Hi.
Excellent. Amy's calling in from work. She couldn't get out of the office. But we won't tell your coworkers that you're taking a conference call.
Okay, yeah.
Hey, Amy.
Hi, Laura.
I was lucky enough to actually work with Laura on the Clinton Street Baking Company cookbook.
Indeed.
And met both Laura and Amy in person, because usually designers are just a figment of photographers' imagination when it comes to cookbooks at the Clinton Street Baking Company launch party. Now, both Laura and Amy have a parallel background in their progression. Both studied, you know, like fine arts photography, worked as photojournalists and photo editors prior to going into design. Amy right now, who works at, what is it, Clarkson Potter?
Clarkson Potter with Random House, yeah.
Excellent. And Amy used to work for Random House and now, works freelance for the majority of things. We're going to dive right into it. One, since you guys were both photographers, photo editors first, how much does that help dealing with photography in the layout of a cookbook?
Actually, I think I was the only one who studied photography. Laura started out as more of a fine art background.
I just copied and pasted twice, I guess.
Laura actually comes to us from the fancy Yale as an art history
major.
Very
fancy.
She doesn't like to brag about it too much because, you know, it intimidates people to know that she went there. But
well, the truth is, it mostly just means I had no idea what a font was until I started working at Random House, which is the truth.
Yeah.
So,
and I was about to say, it's in Connecticut. I mean, really, can you be intimidated by New Haven?
That's a really good point.
So, Amy, with you having that photo background, how important or how influential has it been to how you work with photographs and cookbooks?
Well, I think a lot of designers probably start in different places, and for me, I take huge cues from the photography. And so when I see the photography, I then choose fonts and colors and things based on sort of like what I see there. But I think also it helps for, these are all skills that anyone could learn, but coming in, I think I had kind of an innate sense of like how to run a photo shoot or what kind of was needed of me when I was on set with a photographer, and could kind of say like, oh, we need to add more light here or there. So I think that was pretty helpful coming in, but you know, working at Random House, we all sort of are trained to go on set as art directors of shoots. But yeah, I think it just kind of, to get that start and to come in helped, I sort of start my designs based on photos. I probably lean on them a little more heavily than maybe other designers.
Well, let me also tell our listeners of, you know, this great array of cookbooks you've worked on. Karen Damasco's Craft of Baking.
So fun.
Tom Colicchio's Witchcraft, multiple Rachel Ray's. That Undecorate magazine by the founder of Dwell Studio, which I've looked at and is pretty awesome.
Awesome, yes, it is.
And then Laura's worked on, you know, from Clinton Street Baking Company to Baby Cakes, Gail Gann's Brunch, Taste of Absinthe, all by Clarkson Potter. Most recently, Gwyneth Paltrow's My Father's Daughter cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some pedigree here. I just don't want to think
Laura
that.
Would be like, oh, I have to go meet with Gwyneth today. Yeah. You know.
That was just that one time, though.
She's so fancy.
Yeah. That's true.
But I find it fascinating that you actually were on set and got to interact with the photographers. Laura, did you have that same...
I did work at Clarkson Potter. That's actually how I know the amazing Amy Sly. when I first started out, I was actually an assistant to the creative director before I became a designer, hence the not knowing what a font is. And, the creative director, Mary Sarah Quinn, was really good about letting me go on set because exactly what Amy said, you learn a ton just from seeing the process, seeing how the food is made. You know, I had no idea what food styling entails. And for all the shoots that I've been on, you know, you eat the food right afterwards. You're there to sort of, you know, the photographer usually knows exactly what they're doing. But if you want to talk about where you might see type being laid out or things like that, it's just really good to have your head sort of in that space, watching it all happen. So, yeah, I've been really fortunate. I haven't been on a shoot in a while, to be honest.
I mean, you didn't hang out with Gwyneth. And
I did not get to hang out with Gwyneth. But to Amy's point before, for me, the same thing, the photography very often dictates the book. In the case of Clinton Street, you know, Michael having shot the photography.
Can you hear me blushing?
And it's beautiful.
It is so beautiful. You know, it depends on how it looks. If it's quiet and calm and serene, or if it's the colors are, you know, brighter and bolder or whatever. I definitely like to tip my hat and let the photographs do the heavy lifting, unless it's a different kind of book.
Now, is this... Are these different visual clues? Like, Laura actually worked with a prior guest on the show, Douglas Riccardi from Memo Design, on a whole bunch of Mary Batali books, Pizza and Mozza collateral, as well as Schnippers, you know, signage, etc. Now, do companies like that give you the information before to assemble? So you're not actually working off base photographs. You're working off this initial idea. And it's not like imagery in front of you where you just drop your idea on top.
Yeah, it is really different. I worked at Memo for a little over a year, and Douglas knows everything about the restaurant biz
and fonts.
he designed Hale and Hardy from scratch, and the people who I worked on a number of projects when I was with him, but I was lucky enough to start right when he was starting. Working on Schnippers, and it just so happens that it was actually being built. They were just starting construction, and the restaurant was a few blocks around the corner from our office. So I got to go and be there, and it's very true. It's really different from book design, where you're sort of given, you kind of know, usually a chef or an author has like you just know from their vibe and the way the material is written, whereas when you're working on a restaurant project, I mean, the same is sort of true. You know, it was a burger joint. They wanted certain things. You know, they wanted to convey a certain feel. But you, it's definitely getting to watch and be part of that process of, like, having lots and lots of discussions with the client going, there's probably more back and forth.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what it is they want. But, yeah, that was a fantastic learning experience.
Yeah. So, speaking of back and forth, I know, Amy, you work, you know, for Clarkson Potter, and Laura works freelance. Are there a lot of submissions of designs before getting picked? I know Laura has to deal with that more so, but Amy, are there a whole bunch of designers on your team, and do certain ones get certain cookbooks because of their style?
Definitely, yeah. I think for each list we have, depending on which season it is, there's like between 10 and 15 books a list, and I usually get about 3, and my art director and my creative director meet beforehand and decide who would be a good fit for what, and based on my style I have sort of like a fresh, modern, clean, I guess, aesthetic, and so they tend to give me books that sort of lend toward that, or maybe like a younger feel. And you also kind of get a pick off of the list. So, yeah, every one of us sort of has a style that comes through, and and they try and pair us up with
cool. And
with
what kind of
we'd respond to?
What upcoming titles are you actually working on?
Well, we're in like phases of a whole bunch of books. Undecorate has just been printed, but it's not out yet. So, and I'm checking proofs on a number of books from the last season, which right now I can't even think of the names of. Close them all out. But I did just go through the Baby
Cakes
one for Laura, because that was her title. But right now we're mostly working on concepts for covers and interior spreads for books that are about to start being made into dummies. So I'm working on the Serious Eats blog cookbook, and we're going through. Yeah, it's been so fun. We're going through covers right now, trying to get one that can be printed in our catalog. And doing interior spreads. And I'm working on a book called Hers, which is an interior decorating book about kind of adding feminine touches to spaces. So, yeah. And I'm also working on a casserole cookbook by the Austin Casserole Queens. Yeah, they're two women who started a casserole delivery business in Austin. And they've written a whole book on casseroles. It's pretty funky.
That is cool. Pretty... So... What kind of topics do you guys find yourself gravitating towards when it comes to cookbooks? Do you look for casseroles and you're like, that's my bag? Or do you look for celebrities like Gwyneth and say, I'm going to sidle up my store?
I only work with celebrities. Yeah.
I only work with Gwyneth.
Gwyneth is actually the only celebrity. Full disclosure, radio audience, never actually worked for. But I mean, as a freelancer, you know, there's of course the practicality of taking what's out there.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, but I think for me, and I don't know if Amy feels the same way, but it's the most fun. I mean, what she was saying before about people, you know, you having a certain style. Like I, especially in publishing, books work on a a pretty cyclical and similar schedules. So most of my clients around the same time of year will come back to me, and they kind of, I've been working with most of them for years now, so they sort of know what my style is. So like Amy was saying before, you know, they're going to give me, they'll give me a certain title probably,
yeah,
based on what they know I can probably or hopefully do well. But I actually, for me, getting to work on a totally different project is probably the most fun, because I, you know, getting to stretch the way that I work and having someone, or having a good friend, Amy and I are actually really good friends, who works in the same industry as you do, and we have sort of different styles. It's great to be able to, I'll often be like, Amy, what do you think of this font, or can you please give me an awesome sans serif font, because I'm really bad at and so that's really good.
So Amy is fresh young. What are your descriptors? Old, stodgy.
Old, yeah. Crappy. Yeah.
Since coming from not knowing what a font was, she's actually really amazing at like choosing and pairing fonts. Like she's always surprising me with like, where the heck did you find that? And she's really good at, I think, doing funky kind of like stuff that like stretches. Like I'm really restrained and like sort of mathematical in the way I put a page together, but Laura is really loose and does like layering, and I think I would say that.
Aw.
Yeah. What would you say, Laura?
No, that's fine. I do love me a good font, Michael. Yeah. I do. No, I would agree with Amy. I'm definitely not, I wouldn't describe my style as clean. I do sort of like to kind of jumble things together and layer them. And I usually have a process of paring down, you know. Sometimes the last book I did, actually the Gwyneth Paltrow book, I told myself I was only going to use one font, which was big deal for me.
Yeah.
Big deal. Usually it's at least four or five. So it's, for me, it's usually a process of
paring down.
Oh, it was Tribute. You gotta love it.
Yeah.
So many styles. So yeah, I would say that. I like using like textures and things that have sort of an older feel. I like more retro fonts, or I like archive fonts, things that are redrawn from old type specimens and stuff like that.
You did the New Turn in the South, right, Laura?
I did. That's a book that I'm working on now. Yeah,
that's so cool.
Oh, thank
explain
you.
The typography on that one, because that's not standard.
Please. Yes.
That is a perfect example of being really psyched about working with an author. It's a chef. His name is Hugh Atchison. He's based in Georgia, and he and his photographer, who's also kind of a designer, when they submitted their proposal, it was almost all hand-drawn typography, a lot of sort of weird ephemera and clip art and papers, just like totally right up my alley. And you don't always get that with a cookbook, because this is a perfect example of, you know, the photography is working hand in hand with the rest of the stuff. In fact, it kind of takes a back seat to the, you know, the sort of hand-drawn quality. And it's great. I mean, it feels really homey, and it was really fun to work on. I got to pull out some weird clips of fish and put them places and stuff like that.
So it's almost reading a diary rather than reading an instruction manual.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it feels more like a primer. You know, you're sort of like getting in there, and it's all about the amazing sort of southern feel, and it's good. Yeah, good example, Amy.
Yeah,
well done.
Yeah, I just had the Serious Eats one. I think is one of those click ones for me too, where I was like, I got to play so much with just like typography, and like I love their blog already, so that was like coming into it, I would kind of like got who they were and like played so much, and they loved it, and like, you know, it was just one of those marriage things that doesn't always happen. Sometimes there are a lot more rounds of revisions where editors give you like four adjectives that all seem like they kind of contradict each other and then say go, and you're like, really? And that's why oftentimes photography can give you such a clue, because when you have, you know, like old-fashioned, modern, you know, like put together in one kind of like concept brief, you're like, wow, where do I go with that?
But was the Serious Eats just dealing with Ed, or do you deal with the many voices of the website itself?
The author byline is actually Ed Levine and the editors of SeriousEats.com.
Cool. So. Kenji from the food lab of Serious Eats was actually on the show before.
I heard that, though, and that was so fun.
He's fascinating, and it's a completely different approach. And, you know, Ed's more taste-driven sometimes, and Kenji is more the science of taste-driven. So did you have fun dealing with all the different, you know, kind of visions of the editors of Serious Eats?
I think I haven't read the entire manuscript yet, but there, I think it's more of Ed's tips for things, and then it's sort of like a collection of all of the best sort of barbecue places or best pizza places in the country. So I think it's calling information from the website, but it is more about Ed's voice.
Excellent.
Well, I think, Amy, I don't know if this is a little off topic, but I think she would be the perfect person to ask about working with different, you know, voices, because on the side, you know, in all of her free time, she's an art director for an awesome literary magazine. And, you know, one of, I think, aside from being a fantastic designer, Amy is amazing at, like, having her finger on, like, she's constantly commissioning illustrators and artists and stuff and working with the editors. So I think just that's a, you know, a totally different skill, you know, being able to sort of put all of that together and, like, seeing the vision of a piece as not only your own design, but how to, you know, sort of take the artistic...
Yeah, well, like how to delegate in the best of ways to make yourself seem better. Yeah,
like I think Laurie even touched on that earlier about like when we're at a shoot, we're not like standing around being like, you do that, move that there, because you let everybody do what they're good at, you know? Yeah. And so if you find the people who are really good at what they do, like a great food stylist or a great photographer, like the Ellen Silverman shot The Craft of Baking, and I was basically there to eat stuff and say, maybe move that to the left a little bit so I can put type there.
Yeah.
But when you have really good teams of people, like you don't need to do anything really, you know, like your job is set up for you. So that's great when you can get all the right people together on one project, like you guys had for Clinton Street.
Yeah. Well, like with Ellen with a Craft of Baking, every once in a while we're like, oh, that's not right at all. Let me have that cookie.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's our only rule.
Dangerously so. They were more just like, here's an entire table of, you know, brittle and scones. Please take them with you. And you're like,
Oh, yeah. Clinton Street was, you want another pancake?
Yeah.
Oh, I've never eaten as many cookies as I ate at that launch party. That wasn't pretty.
Can we talk about brookies for a second? Brownie and a cookie making love.
Incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
I think I need to devote a whole show just to the brookie itself.
You definitely do.
So, but on that note, we're going to take a quick break and talk about the boring stuff, programs and workflow. Thanks for listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Naturalist every Monday at 12 p.m.
Bernie Wides, a.k.a. The Naturalist, is a walking encyclopedia of history, biology, geography, and a whole host of other words ending in Y. The Naturalist is his platform to make you just a little bit smarter every week, covering an enormous breadth of topics from animal life to prehistoric New York. Let Bernie's dulcet voice and razor-sharp intellect guide you through 30 minutes of pure, unadulterated knowledge. Co-hosted by Carol Butler. Again, that's every Monday at 12 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with cookbook designers Laura Palese and Amy Sly. Amy, you still with us?
Hi, I'm here.
Hi. I didn't tell you that during that break you wouldn't be able to talk to us for that 1 minute intro. Yeah, just take a break. You've heard enough from us. Yeah, the boring stuff, programs, workflow. It's not boring, though, for people trying to get into design or cookbook design.
Good point.
That, you know, what programs do you use once you get all the imagery in to actually contextually lay out a cookbook?
Amy, you want to take this one?
Well, we have the whole creative suite on our desktops at work. The big starting point is InDesign. Like, that's where we do all of our paging and, you know, designing. Illustrator is also really handy to sort of like try out different flourishes, or and you bring those elements sort of into InDesign. We use Photoshop. Most primarily, the images come to us from the photographers pretty ready to go, but if you're doing a cover design or something, you'll often need to like lighten an area or clone some area to kind of make room for type. And I use Bridge at work, but Lightroom at home to sort images and kind of star them and keep track of like what my selections are, because you can make contact sheets really easily from Bridge. But InDesign is the workhorse. That there's never a day that you don't open InDesign when you're when you're at work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what can InDesign do that other programs can't?
Oh wow, what can't it do?
Yeah, new slogan
do my
for
laundry.
InDesign.
I started when I first started out. I was using Quark. And hey, at the time I thought it was awesome. No dissing on Quark, but InDesign, like Amy said, and her, I would have answered exactly the same way. It when it came out, it was amazing because it works hand in hand flawlessly with, well, for the most part, with Illustrator and Photoshop. So you can, you know, you can drag things directly from one program to the other if you've just, you know, done some sort of typography that you want to use as an EPS file. You literally just drag it into Illustrator and or vice versa, and it, you know, it works perfectly, and it's just so easy. Same with Bridge, you know, you're looking at a photo, you just drag it in. So
that's just like the multi-platform device to be able to put everything into.
For sure
it's built to make multi-page documents, and so that's what a book is.
Hey, there it is. End the show. Yeah. We're out of here.
How boring do you want us to get, Michael?
As boring as you can give it.
Especially when you're laying out a book, and now I think as a freelancer, it works differently depending on what client you're working for. But for me, I lay out my own books, so I'm given a manuscript, and then I have to take. You know, you start with the concept, so you design each element of the book, like a chapter opener, what the recipe is going to look like. Every single tiny aspect of it is given a code or a style that's embedded in Microsoft Word. So when you import the document into InDesign, you set up what are called style sheets. So you give each of those styles what you want them to look like. You know, I want them to be this big, this color. And then conceivably when you flow it in, it's all supposed to pop in like magic. So that's kind of, you can't do that with, say, Illustrator or, you know, Photoshop, because you need to be able to support like a 200-page document. But, you know, really like the style sheeting and that kind of stuff is where InDesign is. Well, Quark had that too. But anyway.
The beauty of style sheets too is that if you need to change a spec later, like all of a sudden someone decides that the head font is like too big and needs to be brought down three sizes. If you would set them all manually, you would have to go in and change all of them, but the style sheets automatically update. It's like cascading style sheets for web designers. Just makes, like, if you have a clean document and you need to make changes later, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
It's pretty rad.
And then it seems like a lot of that has to deal more with fonts and text. Are there any tips you would give a photographer about how you'll eventually use their image in InDesign?
I think sometimes photographers wouldn't know that, like, when you set an image full bleed on a page, we have to bleed a quarter or an eighth of an inch around. So giving us room to kind of crop is nice.
Yeah.
which can be uncomfortable photographers because they want to be able to crop in camera and know their image is perfect. But,
well, I mean,
but
just
pulling back a little bit lets us be able to make things work or push things away from the gutter where you wouldn't want something to die in the gutter.
Yeah, so. I mean, because, well, I mean, I know that like a 35 millimeter camera often formats at like 8:12 and your most cookbook pages are 8x10.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's that 1 inch on either side that moot. It's just not going to make it if it's full bleed.
It's true. Yeah, it's what Amy said. Before you want to be able, each person to do what they're good at. And it definitely with photographers, I'm sure when you're shooting a photo, and Amy would know this because she's a photographer herself, but you have like a specific crop in mind. And it does kind of hurt when you have to blow it up. But sometimes you got to get a sidebar on there.
Yeah.
I mean, you need room for that type. You got to blow it out a little bit more.
Yeah. See, and then after working on a cookbook like Clinton Street and seeing how my images were put into that book, I realized, I can trust somebody else with said photos. So, I mean, it is great.
I think even a simple shift of like most of the time we see things in a panoramic view of horizontal, but like most cookbooks are vertical. So, you know, a lot of the images would need to be shot that way. It's like even just a simple thing.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if this is true for you, Amy, but maybe my first 3 years of photography, I didn't shoot a vertical picture.
Yeah, it's unnatural. It feels quite unnatural, but then you get the hang of it.
Wow. That thought wouldn't cross my mind.
No, I mean, have like vertical grips for cameras, so it feels more comfortable to shoot it that way. But then the majority of books and magazines are that way. But now with the proliferation of the internet, I'm saying that like it just started.
What?
I'm saying it like it just started like 2 months ago. Like, watch out for this internet. But the majority of things I see on there because of the format of computer screens are on the horizontal again.
Yeah. We actually kind of worried about that for the Serious Eats book because we saw the photography on the website and thought, everything's going to come in horizontally. But I think they actually had someone go out and shoot things separately for the book because all the images are perfectly sized and there's a lot of verticals in there. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think, and sometimes I promise I'm not just bringing up the Gwyneth Paltrow book to bring it up because I met her.
Name dropper.
Yeah. I know.
Because Gwyneth is listening right now.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. In all of her
hey,
free
Gwyneth.
Time.
Hey, Apple.
She's my biggest fan.
Yeah, well, Laura texted her earlier and said, be sure and tune in.
Ellen Silverman shot the photographer of that book. And the reason I'm thinking about it is because sometimes you just get really lucky and you have a photographer who knows what they're doing. They've shot a ton of cookbooks. And so she knows, I'm going to give the designer, 8 or 12 giant horizontal full bleeds that she can use for a chapter opener. And, I'm going to give her a lot of setup shots with just as extra ephemera that she can, use in the front matter or just, it's always nice. I think that's aside from the fact that she's an amazing photographer, when you're working with someone who knows what they're doing, that makes your job so much easier because you have everything you need, all the tools right there to like, and that it works seamlessly. So.
Yeah.
That was true of the Baby Cakes book, too. They did a lot of pre-planning with that. Laura designed that one where they would shoot a whole horizontal shot that was going to be the chapter opener that was a little more spare but sort of bright colors and just room for type. But they planned that out ahead of time.
Yeah, it's true. It's super
helpful. And then that was really fun.
How often do you find yourself actually planning out ahead or meeting with the photographer before they start shooting?
That actually isn't. Oftentimes, the projects come to us, and all of that planning is already done ahead of time. Because the way Clarkson Potter works up, the authors pay for the photography, so a lot of times they'll hire the photographers and do a lot of that pre-planning with the editor, and we come in a little bit later. It's different per book, but oftentimes that's something that happens outside of us.
Yeah,
I would agree with that. If you have a great creative director or art director, and Clarkson Potter has both, they're making those decisions with the art director, with the photographer, usually before the shoot happens. But sometimes, like in the case of Clinton Street, I got to meet the authors, so it's past the photography, but they've already worked with the photographer, so then you get to it's nice to be able to hear it straight from the author. They already have their visions. So.
Yeah, I was just a customer, a long-time customer. Yeah. And I think they're like, we got to get you out of that booth. You want to just do some work?
Well, your photos came out pretty good for just a long... Because I'm a long-time customer, too, and they would not have come out like that.
Well, actually hoping to have Didi and Neil on the station soon to talk further about that. But before we go, because this has already been half an hour, if you guys haven't been...
Wow.
Yeah, craziness. covers. They seem to be interesting, you know, extraneous things sometimes outside of the design of a book. What makes a cover special, and how do you go about attacking it?
Oh. Mm. It really depends on the book. I think Amy and I both worked on a book that was a two-part book. One was called Other People's Love Letters, and the other was called Other People's Rejection Letters. And in a book like that, it was a compilation of letters. We got to be really conceptual about the cover. Whereas in a book like Clinton Street, where the bakery already has a logo and beautiful photography, you kind of know I'm gonna put some amazing chocolate chip pancakes on there. So it kind of depends on the project that you're working on. You know, I don't know, Amy, what would you say about that?
I think, yeah, it depends on the project. If there's beautiful photography and it's a cookbook that's all about the beautiful food shot, then you let those sing. I often just try and give a range. Like, you give what you think is expected, and then you want to give a few that are kind of maybe wonker ones. Like, for Momofuku's book, there's just, you know, their logo and that wood grain. And that's the simplicity of that is really catching. So you want to find something that looks tasty and that will kind of pop off the shelf. And it's not just about up to us. Like, we meet with the editors ahead of time usually. Like, here, when you work in-house, you meet with the editors and your art director and look at all the images and try and see what would work. And everybody kind of talks about what they want to see and what they're expecting. And then it goes through. Probably, like, 20 people look at it and give input on it. So the end result is often an amalgamation of, like, what everybody kind of wants to see in the cover and what they think would help sell the book.
Yeah. I don't want to lose sight of the reference point of Momofuku. That, you know, that drew you in just by having that representation. What other covers draw you in? What are some of your favorite cookbook covers?
Oh. I think Balthazar is really beautiful all throughout. I love that.
That is an amazing... I love everything that Tashin does. That breakfast, tea, lunch, just that amazing green cover with the black type. Just awesome.
Yeah.
The range of stuff they do is amazing. Balthazar, that is a good one.
Yeah, that actually made me want to be a cookbook photographer.
Oh,
randomly.
Yeah.
Because I thought I was going to be a war photographer.
Oh, well, there
you go. And Ron Haviv actually shot a lot of the action of the Balthazar cookbook, who's part of Seven Photography. I mean, that travel around the world and, you know, photograph conflict. And I'm like, oh, I could be safer in the kitchen.
Well, that the interior design of that book, that book was being worked on at Potter when I was an assistant. And seeing that topography was so inspiring to me.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And it holds up, too. That's one beautiful thing about that book.
That's true.
That's actually Matteo's work.
Matteo, he's amazing.
Bologna, who was also on the food scene. Hello, Matteo.
Amazing.
You're listening, yeah.
Yes, Mooka Design.
Yeah. So aside from covers, what interior cookbooks have you found most influential over the past few years?
I love all of the baked cookbooks. I especially love the one that just came out. I think the topography in that is beautiful. Did you shoot that?
No. They've also been on the show. Not to pat myself on the back.
You've got your finger on the pulse.
Well, I'm selfish, too, because I was hungry one day, so I invited Matt and Renato in. And I'm trying to become a better cookbook photographer, thusly, you two here. The baked books are amazing.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. I think anything that's... I really like British cookbooks that are designed in Britain. Like, their aesthetic tends to be really, you know, really clean, sort of sans serif-y, chunky font, like letting the, you know, photography really just pop out. I love all of Jamie Oliver's books. I love the interiors of those books. That matte paper is just amazing. Those are probably my top faves, I think.
And Amy, for you?
I would say that actually where I draw, like, the most inspiration for typography is in other places, sort of, like, on the web and looking at poster designers and, you know, like, fiction cover designers, and at restaurants especially, because I think of cookbooks as sort of being an extension of sort of a brand, you know, where you're building a brand for someone. So, yeah, I think that I wouldn't say that I have a lot of interior favorites, but a lot of just, like, designer favorites on the web who are doing all kinds of random stuff.
Yeah.
That aren't maybe necessarily related to cookbooks.
And I'm sure other book covers as well, because we don't want to forget to mention that Amy also helps run Cover Spy.
Which log is on.
A network of publishing nerds. And I'm taking this verbatim from what you wrote me. In New York, DC, London, Buenos Aires, San Fran, who spy the books people are reading in public and report their findings online.
And yeah, we've got a lot of Tumblr followers. People are really into talking about books and the books we see in the world. We started the blog, me and the girls at Slice Magazine, because we didn't want e-books to take over and not have those beautiful covers to be seen when you're out in the world. And so we're reporting on them and letting everyone know that they're still out there.
You don't think Kindles are great looking?
No, what we need to do is figure out how to make a holographic screen on the back of the e-reader that
you
has a book
first.
Cover.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were just going to say bling them out like people do cell phone cases.
Oh, that happens too.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
I've seen a few.
I still like having a cookbook in hand.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, there's nothing wrong with e-books because it makes reading more accessible to people. But, like, cookbooks are this item that's so fun to make because it's something that people keep. And, you know, like, your mom probably has the Joy of Cooking on her shelf from, like, years and years ago. And it's like a family artifact in a way. And we get to make these things that stick around, which it feels really special.
Keep buying cookbooks, everyone.
Yeah.
Yes, keep buying cookbooks. On that note, just wanted to thank the two of you. Your time is up.
Oh, thank you so much.
Amy Sly, Laura Polizzi. I hope everyone takes it to heart. Buy cookbooks.
Yeah.
Keep it in hand. Cook from those cookbooks. And thank you for listening. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hope to hear you tune in Tuesday, 3 p.m.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Momofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Boltley of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barter House Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.
I think part of the sourcing process to me is the most exciting because you know you rent a car and you drive through the south of France and you know you obviously have some appointments set up, but you know some of the most exciting things happen when you're just kind of winging it and you meet a farmer at a wine fair and he says, well, come back to my estate, and you're not quite sure where you're going and you follow a guy in a Peugeot up a rambling hill, and all of a sudden you come across either a castle or a shack in the woods, and the guy's making wine out of the back of his house, or he could be making wine out of a major estate. Looks are deceiving, but you want to assume that someone with a very established chateau is making good wine. But 9 times out of 10, the guy out of the garage who's super passionate is making these better wines, and they're maybe more rustic and less polished. So to me, the restaurateur, the sommelier, this story resonates with them about the small farmer, the guy who's making wine on small quantities, 80 cases, 100 cases. Those are the things exciting to Barterhouse, and hopefully the things exciting to our clients.